a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
This is 98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Yes, good morning, good morning. You're very welcome to another edition and a very special edition of Now That's What I Call Sport here on Dublin's 98FM. My name is Jamie Moore. This week, the Irish football family lost another member as 16-year-old Izzy Dazoo collapsed and died while playing for Shelburne on Tuesday night. We're going to remember him with his former manager, Dave Collins, who tells me about lots of sleepless nights for anyone who had the misfortune of trying to mark Izzy on pitches in Dublin up and down the country on a Sunday morning.
He wouldn't have slept well the night before a game if you were marking Izzy. He was just a great team player and a great lad. You know, all the boys just loved him and loved his attitude.
Yeah, we're going to ask why so many young people are simply dropping dead on our football pitches and if we can do anything to make them safer and stop it. The FAI's medical director, Dr. Alan Byrne, will be here.
This is not a common event. It's a very tragic event, but it's not a common event. And unfortunately, some of the causes for sudden cardiac death, we don't know what those causes are.
And we'll be joined by a fantastic lady called Loya Ayatigbo, whose son Shay died on a football pitch while playing for Belvedere in May 2015. She'll tell us about the horrible phone call she got and then having to rush to the hospital.
Going to the hospital was like, oh, don't worry, he's going to get up. He's just tired. And they said, we have to talk to you. And I said, just let me see him. I didn't register to my mind what she was trying to say. And she said, they've tried everything. He's not responded to it.
Now, Lola also wants to find Izzy Dazoo's family and help them in any way she can. More on that very soon. Let's get the show on the road.
98FM.
Irish football and Ireland in general is still in mourning after 16-year-old Izzy Dazoo collapsed and died very suddenly while playing for Shelburne under-16s against St Kevin's Boys in a league decider in the AOL complex in Clonshock during the week. It was on Tuesday night when the news first broke. And we're delighted to be joined now by Dave Collins from Cherry Orchard Football Club. Dave would have managed Izzy for 5 seasons and is going to join us to look back on a very short career, an all-too-short career of the young footballer. Dave, welcome to 98FM. How are you?
I'm fine. Hi, Jamie. How are you?
Great, thanks, Dave. Listen, we really appreciate your time. We know you've had now a couple of days to digest what happened on Tuesday night. When did you first hear that something may have been wrong with Izzy?
I got a phone call Tuesday evening from my son, who's away in England at the moment, who played with Izzy, and he just said he heard Izzy had taken unwell in the game. So I just said, listen, I'll make inquiries and come back to you, but I wouldn't think it'd be anything serious, you know? So I phoned around a few of the old players and parents and asked anybody to hear any news, and then I heard it was actually a bit more serious than when I first thought. I then got in contact with a couple of lads in Shelburne, and Stephen Finn was very kind enough to go in contact and said he'd be taken to hospital. And within a few minutes then I'd learned of his death, which was just an incredible shock, you know, to hear so quickly so that the young boy was gone, you know.
Yeah, and Dave, just bring us back to when you first knew him. We know he played for St Pat's as a very young schoolboy, and then he moved to you at Cherry Orchard. He's a very successful team and lots of successful years there up until last season when you know, you would have finished with that team and he would have moved on to Shelburne. But you would have worked with him for a number of years from when he was quite young.
Yeah, well, listen, as soon as Izzy came up to the lawns, we knew he had a chance. He had an older brother, and a couple of older brothers, one with Shelburne and one played with Cherry Orchard as well. And they were fantastic players. And Izzy was just another off the production line. You knew he was going to be a player. He was an athlete. He came up. His attitude was excellent straight away. And he just wanted to be there. He wanted to be a footballer. And when you see a young kid like that, 10 years of age, who has that desire so early, you just know that's somebody you want to work with and try to help along their way. So we were delighted to get him in and get him into the group. When he did become part of the group, his personality and everything on top of that was just a huge bonus to his natural ability.
Yeah, it's something I would have seen him play in the last year where I watched the team he would have worked with a number of times. And for those who haven't seen him as a footballer, Dave, he was very quick, very powerful, very strong. And any schoolboy defence knew if Izzy Dazoo was playing against him, they were in for a tough Sunday morning.
Yeah, you wouldn't have slept well the night before a game if you were marking Izzy. You know you're going to have to work hard that day. You're going to have to chase the lines. You're going to have to chase them behind. And his link-up play was excellent. He was what I would call a selfless player. Some of the players would have got a bit more glory because of the hard work that he'd done. He'd done the stuff that a lot of centre-forwards don't want to do. And he was brilliant at it. He set the tone for the whole team. If your centre-forward is willing to work as hard as that and show that attitude, then everybody has to follow suit. He was just a great team player and a great lad. You know, all the boys just loved him and loved his attitude.
I think it's something as well that people don't really think about too much is the bond and the connection that these young people and young players have together, but also the parents on the team. And I know I've spoken to a couple of parents this week of other players who were on the team, and they're devastated. I know you're devastated as the person who would have managed the team along with Padraig Fitzpatrick in recent years as well. And you know, that's something that it brings people together, that you all have, even though he's gone, you all have had and still will have that connection with each other through him.
Yeah, it will always be there, and it's not unique to our team. It's in every club. It's at the Belvedere's, the Shamrock Rovers, the Joey's, all these clubs. They all have it. They all have their groups. There's great people running these teams, managers and coaches, and you know you really are an important person in these young lads' lives. They grow friendships. You're seeing them three nights a week training. You're together maybe twice the weekend. You're seeing them, and you know, most days of the week, and they're becoming a real tight group. We were very fortunate in the group that we got together. We stayed together as a group for a long time. We won together and we lost together, which was vital. You have to win and lose, and that's the whole learning process, and that's what makes them grow and develop into young men, even outside football. And they were just a great group of young men that have, and you can see how they've come together this week, where, you know, they're trying to organise things, they've been in touch with each other. It's just absolutely so proud of them, and Izzy would be so proud of them and how they're behaving and what they're doing, you know.
Yeah, certainly when the news broke on Tuesday night, it spread very, very quickly now with all these young lads on social media, and, you know, they all have Snapchat groups and Instagram, and it was very, very, you know, sudden, his death clearly, but then when the news spread, and straight away then the thoughts were for Izzy, for his family, but also for the young men who he played with at Shelburne and also at Cherry Orchard, who I know were talking to him that afternoon, texting him, wishing him luck in his game, and 3 or 4 hours later, they find out that he's dead.
Yeah, listen, they're always, with social media nowadays, they're always in contact with each other. They're always either giving each other a bit of a slagging or wishing them good luck when they know the big game's coming up. And it's just great nowadays. Like, in our day, we'd be finished and you wouldn't see another lad for 2 or 3 years, like, you know. And they're just constantly in contact with each other, so they really, really get on. These kids that are playing football in the DDSL and now in the League of Ireland, they're great young men. Like, you know, they have the support of the parents, because the commitment you have to make is huge to be playing in football at that level. So they have the family background. They're in school. They're working hard. They know how to behave because of their sporting background. And they're just a credit to their families and their clubs. They really are great young men.
And Dave, in terms of what happened on Tuesday night, I know there was, I wasn't at the game and you weren't at the game either, but from people who we both know who were there, you know, everybody did their utmost to try and save him. I know Dave Henderson, who's an Irish football legend, is a retired fireman. Dave was straight onto the pitch. I understand there was a retired nurse there. There was another physio present. They had a defibrillator and ambulance there quite quickly. And, you know, it's going to affect those people so much as well, that they did so much to try and save him and unfortunately were unable to do so.
Yeah, I sent on word today just to thank him, and Tony McCarthy, two legends of Irish football, two great men in the League of Ireland football. Both of them were on to Izzy, over to him within seconds from what I've been told. And also, I know Stephen Finn was in touch with me from Shelburne, and he told me he ran straight away for the defib, and they got that out to him in minutes. You could not have asked any more from Shelburne Football Club or the AUL, the facility, and to have the equipment there to help the young man. It's just so tragic that it wasn't enough. But you couldn't ask any more from both Shelburne and the AUL, the facilities and what they have out there. It's absolutely fabulous.
Yes, and Dave, we're not going to speculate on the cause of death with Izzy. You know, that's really none of our business, and we don't know exactly how he died. But I can speak from personal experience of Shetemi Shea Ayatigbo, who I actually witnessed drop dead in front of me playing for Belvedere against, ironically, St. Kevin's under-16s in Shannon Road back on May 31st, 2015. It's a moment that will never leave me. He was having a drink and he just collapsed. And again, the physio was on, the defibrillator was on, the ambulance was there, and they were unable to save him. And that's the scariest part. I've actually got goosebumps on my arm now thinking about it, Dave. As football coaches, as parents, as you know, people who are around football a long time, to know that there's that much medical help on hand, and when something like this happens, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do. That's the really scary thing.
No, it gives you shivers. It's undoubtedly, you know, we're medically trained as much as we can as coaches. I've done a DFIP course, and we all do our first aid courses. But sometimes it's just out of our hands, and it's just so unfortunate for these young men who are healthy and who take care of them. And nowadays in football, it's not just of going out and play. If you're playing at the level that Izzy is playing at, you have your strength and conditioning, you have your diet sorted out, you're taking care of yourself, you're going to bed, you're minding yourself, and you've got big matches. So it just doesn't make sense, but I wouldn't be medically qualified to understand why it's happening. But it's just you hope that we can get to the bottom of it and stop. You know, it's happening too regular at the moment.
Yes, I know on the show we're going to speak to Dr. Alan Byrne from the FAI and also Lola Ayitigbo, Shea's mum, and you know, they're going to give their thoughts and their opinions on it, Dave. But it's something that is increasing and you hear more about it. And, you know, again, once it happened on Tuesday, everybody knew, and everybody who found out had that sick, horrible feeling in their stomach. And it's something that we do need to try and find out. Is it, you know, sudden adult death syndrome? Is it a heart thing? Is it a brain thing? There's been calls for, you know, every schoolboy player in the country to be screened. I was even talking to someone during the week who said they felt that there should be an ambulance at every underage match, which would be impossible. Great in theory, but impossible. But it is something that we need to look at, that our young, fit people. I can speak on behalf of Shea and you know, watching him play for Belvedere, he was as fit as a fiddle. I've watched Izzy play, you know him better than me. He was as fit as a fiddle, and unfortunately, bang, they're gone.
Yeah, we can say about having the ambulance there and so forth, but we were very fortunate last week that the medical people who were there watching the match were so qualified. As we mentioned earlier on, they're great, great people, highly qualified people, and there was just nothing that could be done. You can't describe, like, you know, it's just too difficult, really, to comprehend. And as I say, medical people, better qualified people than us, will be looking into it, and presumably are doing research on it and trying to get to the bottom. The news spread everywhere. Like, I've been getting calls from England and abroad, even further abroad, from people telling me, people in America in contact. And then the word spreads like wildfire about this. And I think the reason being, we can all relate to it. We know a lot of people have children, and if not, you've played the game, and you bring your child to a match, you go to watch a match, you see these kids, and you never ever think that he's not going to come home. He's out, and obviously he's high if he wins, and he's down if he loses, and they get over it very quickly. But you just do not expect that the young man's just not going to come home. You just don't expect that.
And I'm sure his parents as well, I don't know if they were at the game, but I know his dad was apparently at every match he ever played for you guys in Cherry Orchard as well. And it's unimaginable to think, you know, they go to watch him play a football match, and in one football match, in the last match of the year before Christmas. I think he would have died 13 days before Christmas, you know, for the parents too, Dave, who I know you know well. We can only send our thoughts and prayers to them as well.
Yeah, Robert and Julia were fantastic people. They got the kid up to all his training sessions. He never missed a training session. Always up there, always at his matches, and the most awkward places at times and awkward times. But, you know, you go to the All-Irelands, you could be travelling to Cork or Donegal, you could be in Galway, and Robert would turn up, he'd be there. We always went on trips. We went on tours to England. We played in the Mill Cup. Always supported the kid, as all the parents do at that level of sport. You know, we all make that effort, and we all do that. And Robert was as good as anybody. He was there, and he had older children and younger. So he used to take them, and you see him at other matches and around. He was always around, and a great character walking around the pitches. And great, great man.
And David, it's something now that, you know, in this week and this weekend and, you know, next week, everybody is still around and people are still talking about Izzy and people are still looking out for his young teammates and his former teammates and his family. But it's in the weeks and months that follow. Certainly, I know this in the case of Shea that died, when it really hits people. And we do need to think, and I know all the football clubs involved have offered counselling and offered help to the kids, the parents. You can think about the referee who refereed the game, the people who tried to help him, that, you know, there will be a lot of people now who may feel that they need some professional help off the back of this, which is something that they shouldn't be ashamed to ask for. I remember I watched Shea die, and I was offered counselling and I never took it. And you're still thinking to this day, would it have actually helped? And if these people do need help, it is going to be there for them, including you, of course.
Yeah, listen, mental health is such a huge thing now, and thankfully it's coming to the fore. I know from playing football, when you stop playing football, how it affects you. It's a different world from playing at certain levels. Not in this scenario, these young lads who are playing, and the lads who coach them, and the people who are at the match, and the Shelbourne lads, it could be a delayed reaction. I know for a fact, Pat's, who some of our boys have went to, I've been in contact, St. Pat's have been in contact with AIR lads and offered them help on anybody they need to speak to. Obviously, they had a great connection with Pieta House. And, you know, you can only applaud the club. I know UCD have done something very similar to the players, which is brilliant. And I'm so thankful for both clubs for doing that. And it's a credit to them that they're looking that far ahead. And it's definitely something that we really, really need to look at and just monitor these kids in the next few weeks and the next few months, and hopefully everything will be. We, you know, we will do something to celebrate his life. We will get together. We will come together as a group and we'll do our bits and pieces. But it's something that has been monitored, and we've sent it to the parents, and some of the parents are feeling very difficult at the moment as well.
Yes, and we also need to mention St. Kevin's boys, who unfortunately are involved again, where it was an under-16 team that was playing against Belvedere when Shea Tigbo died in 2015, and again their under-16 team playing in the match the other night, and we need to say as well that we're thinking of those people at this time. Dave, finally, you mentioned there about, you know, people are going to come together and try and have some sort of a tribute for Izzy. I know you don't know what that is now, but if you were asked for your suggestions on what people, you know, his former teammates and people might do to mark his life and remember him, what sort of things would you be thinking about?
We couldn't speculate that far ahead. We would love to, once the players get together, I'm sure the Shelburne boys would like to get together from the Cherry Orchard boys, who are, as I say, with St. Pat's and UCD and Bowles and all these great clubs. You know, once they come together as young men in football, we'll find some way to celebrate his life. There's no doubt about it. And I feel so sorry for the poor kids of St. Kevin's. There's been numerous people from Kevin's who've contacted me to say they're so disappointed and so upset about the whole situation. That's so unfortunate that their two young children have died playing against their club. It's really, really sad.
Yes, I did see some stuff this week on social media about reports of a possible match in honour of Izzy with the Cherry Orchard, his old team, back together to play against his old Shelburne team as well. That would be a great idea, but we're sure that there's loads of that to come down the line. That's the voice of Dave Collins from Cherry Orchard, who would have managed tragic Izzy Dazoo from the age of 10 until the age of 15 up until last year. Dave, really appreciate your time. I know it's a very difficult week for you as well, so thanks so much and we'll chat to you soon.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, Jamie. Bye-bye.
We've just spoken to Dave Collins, who was Izzy's manager at Cherry Orchard for 5 years, and we're going to be joined very shortly by a lady called Lola Ayatigbo, whose son Shay, playing for Belvedere under-16s, on the 31st of May 2015, a match I was actually at, he also collapsed and died, and Lola will give her views on what can be done maybe to make things safer and avoid any more deaths on our football pitches. But for now, I'm going to be joined on the line by Dr. Alan Byrne, who's the medical director and Ireland senior team doctor with the FAI, and he's also a consultant sports and exercise medicine expert in the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. Alan, welcome to 98FM. How are you?
Thanks, Jamie. I'm very good. How are you?
Good, thank you, Alan. Not too bad. Firstly, I know, like everybody else, you want to express your opening views and condolences to Izzy's family. Awful news that we heard late on Tuesday night.
Absolutely tragic news. One of the physiotherapists who works with the senior team, Tony McCarthy, and also works with Shamrock Rovers, was actually present. And he had sent me a message to let me know what had happened. At that stage, I don't think it was clear whether the young boy had passed, but it's a tragic, really, a tragedy, really, and absolutely, I'd like to pass my condolences, and I'm sure anybody involved in football in Ireland, to Izzy's family and friends and his teammates, which I'm sure have been traumatised by this.
Yes, and Alan, I think the scariest thing for me is, and as I said, I was at that match in 2015 when Shetemi Ayatigbo died, and you know, very quickly they had a defibrillator on the pitch. They had treatment to him. They had an ambulance there. And I know on Tuesday night, in the case of Izzy, you mentioned Tony McCarthy. I think Dave Henderson from Bohemians, who's a very recently retired fireman, was there. I think there was a nurse who was a parent, one of the other kids there. They had a defibrillator. They had the ambulance. I believe they gave the kid an adrenaline shot and nothing was able to save him. And that's the scariest thing, that anything you could think of to save somebody like that was there for Shay and for Izzy. And unfortunately, they weren't able to be saved, which is the scary thing.
Absolutely. And I suppose this is not a common event. It's a very tragic event, but it's not a common event. And unfortunately, some of the causes for sudden cardiac death, we don't know what those causes are. So even when we screen players, and at the FAI, we've been screening our underage teams since 2008, both on the men's and women's side from under 15 and under 17 level. You can't pick up everything, but obviously the attempt in screening is to pick up what we can and what we know. And unfortunately, in this situation, as it happens in other situations, the resuscitation, although it was all in place, it wasn't possible to save this young boy's life. You might remember Fabrice Muamba, who was playing with Bolton at the time, they spent a lot of time resuscitating him. I spoke to the doctor who was involved in that resuscitation, and they persisted because there was sign of life. I do know from talking to Tony that, unfortunately, this young lad's pulse wasn't there. So his chances of survival were obviously diminished greatly by that situation.
Yes, and certainly you would hope that Izzy himself knew nothing about what was happening to him and that sort of stuff as well. But obviously we're not going to speculate because we don't know yet about the exact cause of death. But Alan, you mentioned there about sudden cardiac death, and there's another phrase, SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. We've heard about brain aneurysms and heart attacks and different things. For people who aren't medical experts like me and like most of the listeners, just can you explain what sudden cardiac death and sudden adult death syndrome is? Because, you know, for many people, they hear the word use and they hear the person has died, but they don't really know what it is.
Yes. So I suppose, and again, you make a very good point, Jamie, the autopsy results really may help in deciding what was the exact cause in Izzy's death. It may not, unfortunately, because some of the causes are electrical disturbances for which you may find nothing at autopsy. So I suppose you could use the term sudden cardiac death and SADS interchangeably, really. We tend to use the term SADS in relation to death occurring in a younger population, probably up to 35 years of age. And the causes are many. I suppose sudden cardiac death, which is a much more common a situation that arises in the population in general. There are probably about 5,000 to 6,000 sudden cardiac deaths occurring in the overall population in Ireland every year. So they would arise from coronary artery disease in particular, and issues in relation to maybe high cholesterol and blood pressure. Whereas in the sudden adult death syndrome, it really refers to the younger athlete often, but not always, in which there are a number of well-recognized causes of sudden death, usually resulting in an abnormal rhythm disturbance without complicating a disturbance called ventricular fibrillation, in which the heart is not pumping properly and eventually the heart stops pumping. That can be triggered by a number of different things, some electrical disturbances that are inherent in the person's heart, and there are some structural abnormalities that can trigger this as well. There's a condition called HOCM, hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, and that's another common cause of sudden adult death syndrome, although as I said to you, that sudden adult death syndrome probably accounts for 50 to 60 deaths per year in Ireland. We don't have the exact figures, but extrapolating from those figures in Europe and in the UK, whereas the sudden cardiac death is a more generalised population cause of death and a very common and preventable as well cause of death. So the SADS is a subgroup of that, and as I said, not a common cause, but a very tragic one, because it's usually occurring in young people who are fit and active, and people are left wondering, you know, how did this happen to a young, fit person?
Exactly, and I think, you know, Izzy passed away in the second half of the game on Tuesday night, and anybody who was at the match, I wasn't there myself, you know, if you'd asked them at half time, were they to say that somebody on the pitch within 20 minutes was going to drop to their death at the age of 16, they would have said absolutely not. And that's how sudden, and the word sudden is used in both sudden cardiac death and sudden adult death syndrome, but it is, Alan, so sudden that they're playing the football match and next of all they're just gone.
Yes, and I suppose that is why moving on to the resuscitation ability, I think we spoke off air, Jamie, that, you know, the basic life support techniques are life skills, not for doctors or nurses or paramedics. They're for everybody. They're for radio presenters. They're for coaches, players, referees, parents. It's a life skill, and one that I think we should all try and learn. And you can do a refresher course every 2 years, and it gives you an opportunity when you have the equipment available that you can, you know, early defibrillation is the key in terms of saving lives. So whilst there has been a lot of, at the Football Association, we have placed a lot of resources on in prevention and screening our underage and League of Ireland players, I firmly believe that the other end of that equation is adequate training in basic life support and resuscitation. And as you mentioned, I know David Henderson very well, played football with him going back when we were schoolboys. And David obviously is trained as an ambulance person. And Tony, we do an annual training course with all of our international staff, international team doctors and physios, so that our skills are brought up to speed. So in this situation, obviously the appropriate, as you mentioned earlier, resuscitation equipment and techniques were all available. But unfortunately, the end was tragic. So the screening is one part of the equation, and the resuscitation is another very, very important part as well.
Yes, and just interested, Alan, to ask you about that. And you mentioned Tony McCarthy and Dave Henderson, and you yourself, back a couple of years ago, had to basically help save the life of Shane Duffy. I know it wasn't a cardiac arrest or a brain aneurysm, but you still had to help save his life. In that situation, and that situation, say, on Tuesday, or in any case where something happens, how stressful is that for you, the doctor, the physio, the CPR-trained person who's trying to save that child's life in the case of Izzy? There's so many eyes on you. It's so sudden. And, you know, everybody is in a panic, but you need to be probably as ice cool as you can, because you've got a job to do, a very, very important job.
Yeah, I'd have to say, when I think back about Shane, which is a different thing altogether, I wasn't panicked at all about it. Neither were the staff that were there. I suppose it's what's expected of you. Certainly panicking in our business is not going to help anybody, Jamie. I'm not saying that looking back at Shane Duffy's incident, I certainly am glad that the decision-making process and that all the backup that we had there, you know, Professor John O'Byrne was there, Kieran Murray, we had a lot of help, we had two ambulances there, and it was probably one of the lowest key matches I've ever been involved in. So preparation, I always feel if you're going into the games and you're prepared well, you've got all of your protocols laid out, the staff know what's expected of them, then it really, you just click into gear and get your job done. I think afterwards, certainly, you can reflect on it and it can send a chill. I know a few days afterwards, I remember reflecting on what happened to Shane, and even when I see him now, I still get flashbacks to it. But at the time, I think you just switch on. And I'd say when that lad collapsed, you know, Tony and David and the nurse who was there and the other people, they just probably just clicked into gear and just realised they had to use those skills that they've been practising over many years.
And Alan, it's, you know, if you look at you and the Ireland senior team, when yourself and Kieran Murray run onto the pitch, you've got three or four bags with you with everything you could need. If you need something else, you've got a signal or you've got a walkie-talkie, and you've got people, an ambulance, you know, on the pitch within seconds that can help. In the case of underage football and schoolboy football, that isn't always the case. There are some clubs that don't even have a first aid kit. There are other clubs who would have everything you can think of. Most clubs that I go to now do have a defibrillator, and they do have people trained to use it. For me, and we did a piece last year recently on concussion in rugby, and I was speaking to the doctor and I was saying, train the referees. Train every referee in the country in every sport in CPR. I don't know if there's enough money there, you know, to buy them all a defibrillator, but just maybe train them and maybe buy them a first aid bag with the basic stuff in it. If someone gets a bad cut or someone swallows their tongue or something happens, that at least, you know, every sporting match needs a referee, and therefore if the referee is trained, he can help, because and ironically he's going to be nearest probably to the person that gets hurt as well.
Well, I firmly believe, James, that it would be fantastic if the referees were trained in basic life support, because obviously the health and safety of the players is of paramount importance to the referee. And also I think the coaches, if you had the coaches of both teams meeting, I'm not talking about specifically the incident that occurred, but I'm talking about in general, where they met, obviously they made sure that they had the appropriate equipment, that they were both trained, and the referee. Then you have three people that are in charge of the scene. And I mean, I've often, when we've been talking to our own coaches in their coach education program and doctors, that if you want to collapse, collapse in Aviva, because not alone we have, you know, first frontline paramedics, two teams for of paramedics on the side of the pitch. We have a consultant anaesthetist there. We have a radiologist, an orthopaedic surgeon, myself and my colleagues as well, and the backroom team. You know, so it is a place where if you want to, I'm not suggesting do it, but if you're going to have a serious injury or a sudden collapse, have it somewhere like there. But I think you're right. It's the bottom of the pyramid that we need to be talking about, whether that's in Phoenix Park or the AUL, somewhere in Galway, Donegal, Kerry, it doesn't matter, throughout the country. So going back to what I was saying earlier, this is a life skill that we should all be learning. In fact, in some countries, they're taught it in school.
Well, they should be here, yeah.
I think that would be a good area where we could develop. You'd always hope out of some tragedy like this, and your heart has to go out to Izzy's parents and family and friends, and I think his teammates, because I know when the young lad who died at Belvedere, I put them in touch with some counsellors to help the players deal with the trauma of that, and those counsellors are involved with helping the Shelburne players. Have already been out there, and I've been in touch with the counsellor today about how we might move things on. But I think what you'd like as a parent, I suppose, if you're entrusting your son or your daughter to a team and a club, that, and if something happens, that everything that is possible to do that could be done is done. And that requires a level of training. When you think about it, referees are highly trained in terms of their own skill set, refereeing, coaches likewise, the whole series of ladders, as you know, that coaches go through. And I think one of those ladders and one of those boxes that should be ticked is basic life support. And hopefully, out of something as tragic as what happened to Izzy, we can use that as a springboard, perhaps, to encourage training across all the areas we've discussed today. And it might give some comfort to his parents. Obviously, it's not going to bring Izzy back, but it might provide some comfort down the road, knowing that the tragedy that visited their family was used in a very positive way to save other lives.
Yes, Alan, and the point you made about the school is a very valid one, and I won't open up a can of worms and mention certain subjects that I feel certainly should be dumped in favour of first aid, because first aid is as important as anything in the world than some of the subjects that our kids in school learn that they'll never use in their lives. But anyway, that's a debate for another day. But how fantastic would it be for 16-year-old kids, a teammate, to be able to help save another teammate's life if something was to happen? And that is certainly something to look at. The referees is another, the parents and the coaches. I know here in 98FM we get first aid training twice a year, and you know, if someone was to drop in our office, there are a number of people who would hopefully be able to try and help them and save them, or at least keep them going until the proper medical personnel were to arrive. Alan, just a final one, the future, and that's why we're doing this interview, to try and highlight the issue and to try and find out if there's ways of avoiding this to happen in future. And you mentioned about the screening of the underage international teams. I spoke to someone during the week who said they feel that every underage player in the country should be screened. It's hugely expensive to do that. They also said that they feel there should be an ambulance at every sporting match in the country. It's impossible to do that also. What do you feel are the simple bits that we could actually achieve from this and from Shea and from the others that could be a help in the future?
Well, certainly from I adopted our screening program, started in 2008 with our under 15 boys and then with our under 17 women's teams, and then extended that to the League of Ireland. And it's been very effective. We've been able to pick up some unusual findings. Thankfully, we've been able to sort out all of the problems. I think the screening, if it's done en masse, can be done quite economically. And I certainly, if anybody, you know, wanted some recommendations, I can recommend a number of different groups that are very skilled in the screening area. I think one of the things that's important about cardiac screening, so the cardiac screen in its basic form is a questionnaire of 6 or 7 questions, very straightforward questions, a cardiac focused examination, so that needs to be done by a doctor, and a resting ECG or electrocardiogram, so you can see the electrical activity in the heart. Following on those, that information should then be reviewed by a cardiologist. And there are a number of, there's a company down in Cork, Advanced Medical Services, and they've been screening thousands of athletes and schools over the last 6 or 7 years, both soccer, rugby, Gaelic football, and other sports. And it's a consultant-led cardiac screening process where the information is electronically delivered to the cardiologist. So the cardiologist doesn't have to see the player, because that would prove expensive and also time-consuming. And the decision can be made, and these are experienced cardiologists who are used to looking at ECGs and information from fit, healthy people, because their ECGs are slightly different to an unfit person, as you can imagine. And the borderline, and there have been some very clear guidelines issued in the last couple of years that delineate what's a healthy heart from an athlete as opposed to one that is potentially pathological. So in the right hands, the screening is very successful. I think it's very doable and very economical if it could be done en masse, where a club, for example, I've worked in a consultancy capacity with Shamrock Rovers and have done for many years. And one of the things that the academy have, before this tragic incident occurred, was that we would train all of our coaches for the upcoming season in basic life support. So that, and Rovers have appointed their first academy doctor a couple of months ago. So, you know, I think there are ways, I wouldn't say there's one system fits all, but it's certainly possible where clubs could come together, leagues could come together, and the screening is very doable. About 8 to 10% of players, if you look at the international data, and it would, our own data would go along with that, about 8 to 10% require further tests to clarify issues that might arise in their examination or their ECG or both. And that would include an echocardiogram, which is like an ultrasound. If you can imagine, the ECG looks at the electrical activity. If you think the electrical devices in your office there, for example, the light switch, the telephone, the computer, whereas an echocardiogram looks at perhaps the size of the window, the size of the door, the height of the room, those types of looking at it in a different, a structural way. But from the screening, and I'm not breaking any confidence because it was well publicised, when we started the League of Ireland cardiac screening, I don't know if you remember Sean Prunty, I hope Sean won't mind me mentioning it because we were on TV talking about it to promote the whole area of screening. But Sean's screening revealed an abnormality and he ended up having to be fitted with a defibrillator and had to pack in playing football, although recent contact with him lets me know that he's doing very well. So the screening is effective and can be economic, I think, if the numbers are there. And I know out of this, I think, you know, it should, I suppose, be incumbent on all of us, whether you're coaching at schoolboy level or at senior level, that we look at ways in which we could try and prevent this tragic event occurring again. It won't be possible to prevent all of them, but it certainly will be possible to prevent a number. And then likewise, as I've mentioned and you've mentioned, the training in the basic life support will definitely save lives.
Now, Dr. Alan Byrne, you must be robbing my questions because the last thing I've written on my little script here is Sean Prunty's story. And would you believe Sean actually played football for Belvedere for my dad, John. My dad managed him for a number of years. And I was only, just before I spoke to you, I was doing some research and I was reading up on his story back in 2008, which I think was the first year that the FAI and probably the Aircom League at the time introduced this screening. And it found an abnormality. He had to have more tests and they discovered that if he kept playing, he could have dropped dead. And they put in a mini defibrillator. And now even though he can play, he's alive. So it's a story that this screening, even though it may be expensive and it may be difficult to do or whatever, it does save lives, and he's a prime example of that.
Yes, well, so we started the under 15 boys and women's under 17s as a starting point, as a sort of pilot, see, you know, that it would work okay. And I'd done a lot of research into the Italian model in particular, which has been going for 25, 30 years. Adapted it for our model to fit with that, and once we got it going with the international end of things, I was able to, with the agreement of the FAI, including the club licensing protocol, medical care of players. So, and Sean was, I screened. Sean was, had just signed for Drogheda, his first full time contract, and I screened Drogheda, Bohemians, and Rovers to see if it would, you know, how the system would work. And Sean's ECG was abnormal, and he saw a cardiologist and then eventually had the ICD implanted. And we've kept in touch. And it was, I suppose, it certainly helped. Some of your colleagues in the media were very helpful in terms of publicising the whole screening programme. And it's unfortunate that it takes incidents like this to, you know, raise our awareness again. Although we've been aware of it for a long, long time. Once the, if you remember Cormac McAnallan, when he died, There was a report into sudden cardiac death, and following that report, it was incumbent on all the major sporting organisations to introduce their screening programmes, and GAA and rugby and ourselves have done that, and there are a lot of similarities about the programmes. So, you know, Sean is a great example of how a screening programme can work and save a life, because there's no doubt in my mind, and Sean would admit when he goes back over his story, he was getting some subtle symptoms that he didn't realise were related to this. But obviously on the ECG, I remember looking at it on the day and realising there was something wrong here and we needed to act. And well, it meant the end of his career. It meant also, I think he went back to college. As I said, we were in touch not too long ago, in fact. And I know he's keeping well and doing well. So screening does work, Jamie. And hopefully we can use the tragic events, recent events, to use it as a springboard so that more screening occurs. And also not to forget the training and basic life support. I really do feel the coaches and the referees are key in all of this.
Yes, and as you mentioned there, it signalled the end of Sean Prunty's career, but thankfully not his life. And Sean is someone who we will try to, and I'm sure we will speak to maybe early in the new year, just to go through his story and highlight it. That's the voice of Dr. Alan Byrne, who's the medical director with the FAI and also a consultant in sports and exercise medicine at the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. Alan, fascinating stuff. I spoke to you for a lot longer than I planned to, so sorry for taking so much of your time. If people want to hear more or kind of learn more, or if they'd like to, you know, just to read some more on this subject, is there any good websites or any good places they can go and have a look?
Well, the CRY website is probably good, Cardiac Risk in the Young.
Yeah.
It's a very good organisation. There's a lot of charitable work based in Tallaght. Dr. Deirdre Ward is the lead cardiologist and the expert, really, I think, in the country in this area. So that's where I'd go for the Irish Heart Foundation as well. The Irish Heart Foundation would be another good website to look at. But CRY, I think, would be a good, Cardiac Risk in the Young would be a good website to start off with.
Dr. Alan Byrne, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jamie. Take care and have a bye.
Now, we're going to continue remembering Izzy Dizou, who died on Tuesday night while playing for Shelburne. And we're joined now by Lola Ayatigbo, whose son Shay collapsed and died aged 16 while playing for Belvedere against St Kevin's Boys back a couple of years ago on the 31st of May 2015. I met up with Lola in her house in Donabate on Friday. Lola, thanks so much for having the time to have a chat to me. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
Lola, thank you. Tell me about Tuesday evening when you first heard that something had happened to Izzy playing for Shelburne.
Actually, my youngest son heard about it and he came to my room and he told my mom it's the same thing that happened to Shay, happened to one boy. And I said, "You serious?" He said, "Yes." And from there on, and it was just, I was shaking, really totally shaking. It brought all the memory back to me. And I just want to hug that woman. I just want to be there for her because I know how hard it is. And the hope that you have for your children and living home and not coming back home, it is a terrible news for any parent to go through or to hear about. So as for me, I felt for the family so much because actually the next day I was driving all over the place trying to find that woman. Just someone said she lived in Tallaght. I just want to be there just to tell her, you know what? Just going to be okay. The pain, you know, people tell you the pain is going to go. No, I don't think so. But I don't know if she have other children, you know, which is they become more important. They will become more important to her because as life goes on, you know, there's nothing anybody can do to bring them back. But as for me, I want to know the reason why this is happening to the children. Whether yellow, green, black, or wherever you might have come from, there's still someone's children. And we're losing our children for what we don't know anything about. So I want to find an answer. What can we do to save our children? What can the club do to help the children, you know, to give them, they love the sport. And by doing this sport, they have to enjoy it, not to have fear in their mind. I could just imagine those boys, they were there watching their friends collapse. How hard, and I know Shetemi friends went through this and they went through the bad way. And for me, I felt for each one of those boys that were that was there when this happened, you know. So this, we need to know what is going on, you know. And I would say this, every vibrator, is it what you call it, vibrator? Need to be have by the feed, you know. They need to have this, every small club. If we have to go out there, do something, help the club to be able to have this, they need to have it.
Yeah, it is. It's an important thing. And I know from speaking to you on the phone during the week, Lola, that you actually went to Tala, you drove and you tried to find Izzy's parents, which is so nice, but you weren't able to find them just yet, but we're going to try and help you find them this week.
Please, please, I just want to be, just to tell her, just to give her a hug, just to hold her, because it run deep, it run deep, so deep than anybody can think of. I mean, you can see so many people, so much around you. And to me, that time, everybody become like a hand. That's the way I see them. I couldn't see clearly. And I thought, I cannot live without shitting me. I thought I could not live without shitting me. And I will continue to say, thank God for my community. But and that woman needs someone, need people to be there. That community need to rally around her, because it's not really an easy thing. Please, they need to be there for her. Because it's very hard. It is very hard.
And if you had the chance to speak to the parents, and I know you will, and I know they have other children, if they're listening to this now and you haven't seen them yet, what would you say to them? Because they're only less than a week out from what happened, and they would have, I'm not sure if they were at the match, or I know when Shay died, you weren't at the match, and you got a phone call, and you had to rush to the hospital.
Yeah. You know, it is a shock to the system, a shock to your brain. And even your brain, you don't want to accept in your head that this is really happening to you. And I would tell them, for me, because I'm a Christian, I lay all to God, but I fight with my faith every day in and day out about how I'm going to live without my son. And when I think about my other two, I know if I go down, they will go down with me. So I need to gather all my strength to be able to be there for my other children. Because if I've already lose one, I don't want to lose another two. Another one, I have two left. I don't want to lose any one of those. If I don't stand up, seek counseling, thank God for my community, thank God for my friends, my faith. If I don't go through all those things, look into it, I won't be where I am today. It's still very, every time, special moment, you think about them, but in a good memory. Have that young man in a good place in their heart, because it's very easy to turn to the other end. And I would say, help, seek help. If you're not having it, I'm here. I'm really saying this because there's a lot of people that was there for me. I'm here. If you need me, I'm here. And just to talk to someone. If you need to talk to someone, midnight, daytime, I do the same thing. I went through the same thing. So it's not, I wish we meet in a joyful occasion, but this is a very sad one. But I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes, and we're here in your lovely new house here in Donabate, and your community here and everybody around you, you know, was there for you when Shay died, and his football club Belvedere and his old club Home Farm, and everybody was there. Lola, just bring me back to May the 31st, 2015, when you had heard that Shay was going to play a big match for Belvedere against St. Kevin's. They're big rivals.
Yeah.
It was a really important match. I was at the match, and on the morning of the match, Shay went off from your old house, not this house, your old house, and he was getting ready to go and play in another important match for his team.
Yeah. And I asked him, I said, Shay, can you give today to me? Today's my birthday. My families are here to celebrate my birthday. And he said, no, I'm not going to let my mate down. I can't let my mate down. And I was actually very annoyed with him. I said, well, go and play your football. And if any one of my children still have the passion for this football, I want to be able to say, okay, you can do it as long as I know this, as long as a lot of parents are going to be there. And one thing that they want to understand, this is going to affect all these, our children, because like my community, African community, is going to be looking, I don't want you to do this anymore. But I want them to teach, to tell her what is going on, what is taking our children away, what is happening to their hearts. I mean, Shea was the left. I can't pronounce all these medical things that they said.
Yeah.
Shea, very fit young man, very fit, and to see him collapse. And I remember he said something, and I said, Mommy, I have to play this match. We have to beat St. Kevin. He was so determined to beat that their club is going to beat St. Kevin because he enjoys what he does. He loves what he does. And I'm sure the same young man loves what he does. I want the family not to say, we regret ever putting him there. No. And I don't want my community, as a black community, to feel like I'm not letting my children go. I want them to let their children go, but I want them to find out, what can I do to save my children? What can I do to help him to achieve his dream on this, on the pitch, in the football, on football thing? Because if you don't know, that's when the fear will come in. So for them not to have fear, and any other community, you know, need to find out. It's not whether black or yellow or green, whatever. It's not about color. It's about a child, someone's child. I want them to understand, what can we do to save them? What do we need, sign do we need to look at? You know, because we can't just let them go like that and let this continue to happen. It's not, this is probably about fourth or fifth one that's happening now. And we can't sit up. This is it. We cannot sit down anymore. Anything that they think every club should be aware of, they need to look into it for the life of these young men, that they love to do what they enjoy.
Yeah, and it's something that we've spoken about on the show earlier on today to Dr. Alan Byrne from the FAI, and it's a very interesting interview which I'll send you to listen to. The listeners will have already heard it, and he was speaking about, you know, at the FAI they screen a lot of the younger players and that sort of stuff, but there are certain things that happen to certain kids that if they had been screened that morning, something bad could happen to them that afternoon and they could still be gone. And that's the scary part for you. And you were at your birthday celebrations that Sunday, and you get a phone call to say you've got to come to the hospital now.
Yeah. Oh, Shea's supposed to meet us there later in the evening, because that's what he said. He said, I'm going to come back. I'm going to rest for a while before, but I join you in the evening. But it wasn't even the evening when I heard about someone call me around past 12, I think.
Yeah.
And going to the hospital was like, oh, don't worry, he's going to get up. Oh, he's just tired. And they said, we have to talk to you. And I said, just let me see him. You know, let me see. And he said, we really need to talk to you. And that one, I didn't register to my mind what she was trying to say. And she said, they've tried everything. They do. It's not responded to it. And I said, I still didn't get it. And I said, come on, it's going to be okay. It's just that. Because she never leave home without not having breakfast. So I know it's not that he's running with empty stomach and things like that. So I said, let me go. And I saw him. So sad.
Yeah. So just while Lola takes a minute, for people who weren't at the match, it was Belvedere against St. Kevin's. Early enough in the game, there was an injury to a St. Kevin's player with an ankle injury, and Shea went over to the Belvedere dugout to get a drink and just fell. And straight away, the St. Kevin's physio, whose name is Kieran Heffernan, and I know you've spoken to Kieran since, he was straight over. They had a defibrillator from the clubhouse straight over. The ambulance came and Shea was taken away. And at that stage, us at the game, we didn't know either what had happened. And Lola, you had got to the hospital and you'd asked the nurses that you needed to go in and see Shea, and when you went in to see him, you still thought, and I know a number of your family still thought, we can help get him better.
Yeah, actually, we still believe, because we believe in God. We believe he's going to do something. You can't just take him. That's my only answer. You just can't take him, you know. So, and we went through that, I mean, throughout till I left the Beaumont Hospital around 9 o'clock. Since it's happening, we've just been praying for God to do something. It's very hard to let go of your son, of your daughter, of your child, just to see, just go like that. And saying there's so many people go through so many things. It doesn't have to be because it happened on the feed. But every parent, no matter where it happened, it doesn't, it's a pain that roots so deep that years doesn't even cut it. It doesn't take care of it. But as a woman being, we know, you hear so many things happen to other people and you said, oh, I feel sorry. And maybe a day or two, you forget about it. Oh, but as for you that you're dealing with it, you live with a nightmare. But I don't want anybody to live with a nightmare. I want people to look at it like, I have a good memory. I have a good memory of my son. I don't have to look so far before I think of him. Every day, I don't need to think so far. Everything will remind me of him. Even a child crossing the road or someone holding a child's hand. And I could just remember Shay doing that. So the club need to help. I know you said that the doctor said even if they screen them now, it can still happen. That's a very scary one to know. And how will we say, how will we tell the parents to let their children go? What can we say to the parent? What step would the parents need to be taking? Is it every three months? They need, a very active young man need to be checked. Is it every 6 months? A young active man need to be checked their heart. Because when you look at what happened to Shay, it said when they do strong exercise and acrobatic or something that's very, that's what, when that one will happen. So, football is running left and right. And I want those young men, young women that are doing this lovely sport should go on, but we need help for them. Well, no, I'm not going to settle in that there's nothing we can do for him. There will be always something. There will be something we can do to save our children. Whether green or yellow or black, I don't care. We have to save these children. We need to give them their life, not to take it away by sitting back and say, there's nothing we can do. So if it's 3 months, 2 months, they need to be checked. They need to be checked. They need to find out. My son, active, strong, determined young man. If I've heard about this before, my God, I know. Shall we be in the doctor every 2 months, every 1 month, I know I'll be pushing it that way. If I've really thought, because when things doesn't happen to you, you never really think deep about it. Yeah. So I'm sorry for the family, and may so rest in peace. But if the mother want to talk day, night, evening, my number, I'll give it to someone to give it to her. To tell her it's okay for whatever she feel. If she feel angry, if she's angry with the club, if she's angry with herself. I was angry with myself for not going there with Shay that day. Thinking if they were there, maybe my reaction, hearing my voice or something like that, will I bring him back? You know, so I don't know if she was there or she's not. Or he, father was there or his father is not. I don't know. But the first thing, you have to lose, as you're going through the grief, is the anger. Because the anger will make you to resent yourself and feel guilty and hide the pain. You will hide the pain from other people not to see. And people need to be there for her, and she needs to share. I was able to share my my thought, my mind, and I was giving help. I have a lot of help, counseling, me and the children. We went through counseling. We went to hospital checkup. We were screened to know if is this in the family, because I never heard of it before. It's not in the family. And I remember the doctor that checked my son, Victor. He said, oh my God, I was so afraid that if this thing, if it wasn't right to tell you that his heart, he has problem with his heart. But she said to me, his heart is beautiful and I can't forget that word. And it was like she gave me $1 million that day. Wow. I was happy as a mother to know there's nothing really wrong with my other children.
You're listening to Now That's What I Call Sport and watching Now That's What I Call Sport here on 98FM. It's Jamie Moore. I'm in Donabate with Lola Ayatigbo, who's the mother of Shay, who tragically died playing for Belvedere just under 2.5 years ago in May 2015. It's in the light of the death of Izzy Dizou this week. Lola, you're telling us an amazing story of Shay, the sad stuff. Yeah. I want to talk about the happy stuff. And I want to talk about Shay's smile, which people will see in the video. And I'm going to show you some stuff here in your living room, which is a shrine to Shay, with photos and trophies and Player of the Year trophies. Yes. Tell me the story of Shay on the morning of the match that he died. I know you weren't there, but in the dressing room, because it's fair to say he liked a little dance.
Yeah. Oh, actually, he made a video a night before, actually making fun of his uncles, because they are very bald. And they don't have any hair on their head. And he was saying, I'm telling you, I'm not going to be like that, but we all know Shetemi was going to be bald, very, because his hair was going pushing back.
You won't be happy hearing you say that.
So we all know that's going to happen. So they were telling him, and he was making fun of them. And the next morning, he wake up as usual, get ready, and even in the house, he was making still. Oh, you know what? Let me tell you this: what is going to happen today? We're going to beat them. He was just telling his uncles and auntie what the club are going to, his club is going to do to St. Kevin. He until when he get to the club, what he was doing in the house was like pushing one leg in front, pushing one leg into the back, and he was making fun. And one of his auntie have to drop him that day. But the same thing he did in the club. And because Shay knows one thing, he know the trick long time ago. And if they're playing football, the voice you'll be hearing is Shay. Yeah. Come on, lad, you know, get up, come on. He always screaming and give them energy, you know, with his voice, oh, come on, you're doing it, that's it, you know. I don't know how to say this. But one thing I know, Shetemi give all to his club.
Correct, yeah.
Everything he have inside and out, he give it to that club. And the club did the same thing for him. And the club was so good to the family. They were very good to us. And even though sometimes, as a parent, you feel angry. You feel angry. For me, I felt angry with myself not being there. I felt angry with everybody not doing enough. And I know they did. Yeah. Deep down, I know they did. I was angry that why can't they do something? Why didn't they do this? Everything that needed to be done was done. But it's just what someone that is grieving go through. A loving man, a young man that love life, love to laugh, love to help. He's a very caring young lad, and he has so many friends. And I used to be so angry with him that how do you just, actually I can't use the same word I used to use to him. I used to call him, how do you pick friends as if you're picking flower on the feed?
Yeah.
He pick friends just like that, and he just doesn't, just when he make friend, he make a friend for life. Shay doesn't make a friend just to say hello. He say hello and he will talk to you. He want to know who you are. He wants you to know who he is. That's my Shay. That's who I remember every day. The smile, gorgeous smile. And he smiled so deep and he closed his eyes. And that's the kind of his. He, when he give love, he give everything. When he's hungry, he's hungry. But I love him.
Yes, and I know he loved you too. And for anybody who hasn't met Shay, we're going to pop up some photos on our at 98FM Sport Twitter and Facebook pages. His smile is absolutely fantastic. So it's worth looking out for. Lola, last two questions. The outpouring of support for you from the football clubs we mentioned, from the community in Donabate. It's the biggest funeral I've ever been to. Then shortly afterwards, there was a memorial match by Belvedere against the Ireland under-16s in Clontarf. Thousands of people there, your whole family there. There was an event afterwards in the Croke Park Hotel. The school have set up some, you know, a trust in his name to help other families. How much of a support was that and is that for you? And I know last night, we're recording this interview on Friday, on Thursday in Talla, they had a vigil and some candles for Izzy and his family were there. And, you know, that support, I know you know, is still there. And for Izzy's family now, that's going to be there for them too. And it doesn't bring him back, but it certainly does help.
Oh, it helped a lot. And I never met a group of women. I met amazing women that, even though we live together and in the same community, never know that they exist. Women that dedicate themselves to cook for Lola. Women that dedicate themselves to make sure Lola smile. Men that dedicate themselves to make sure that all the necessary things that Lola needs to do have to be done. Community, my community fought for us in so many ways. So many ways for us to get our house in Donabate, because I can't live anywhere without, I don't see myself not seeing my son, even though he's not here, not to be able to go there, you know. It's very easy for me. If I'm thinking of him, I can just walk down to the grave and just sit down there and talk to him. The day she to me passed away, something amazing thing happened, which I didn't even notice then, was the whole Donabate shop was closed down. The day she to me was going to be buried, every shop's closed down. The community, the football club, they give him the honor that is befitting my own hero. A honor that befitting my own hero was given to him. And I mean, I was standing for good 2 hours before we can even start anything. I was standing, hugging, being hugged, being kissed. You know, by the time we finished we start the whole thing, I was at peace, just inner peace. The hug, people keep on hugging me, hugging my children. By the time I sat down, I was at peace. I was ready to face whatever is there for me to face. You know, the school, they educate together, set up a trust fund with the help of the club. They set it up for him to help other people in the community on his name. And the secondary school make a tree. they dedicate a tree for him. And so many things was done every year. It's when it was first 1 year, there's a football match with Belvedere and
The Ireland
under 16 was there, and that was an amazing day. It was really good. It was my family was there, and for people to go out of their way to do this, to honor a young proper typical Irish lad, that in that way, I was very proud. I was proud to be his mom. I was so proud to be among the family of Belvedere, because I'm their family now. They're part of my family, because every time I think of Shetmi, I'm going to think of them. The support they give to us was so great. They didn't just leave after they've given me befitting burial. It was continually. And even Kieran, when it happened, the day it happened, the next thing, the first person, Kieran, was trying to get in touch with me, but he wasn't able to. He got in touch with Maeve in the school and said, "How's Lola doing? How's Lola doing?" You see, that shows that even though Shay is not there, Shay's still part of the family. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad that I know the club, my community. And I pray the same thing, the same help, the community of this guy,
Izzy
from Tala. Yeah. Give him that, give the family that support, that really, really support. He's not just going there today and tomorrow is finished. My was continually for a whole year. I have people that comes in, go with me for a walk. And we even set up marathon that we did. We do women marathon every year. We go for walk for Shay, you know, just to put on his in the trust fund for him, for the people that this could help. I don't know much about all this because I'm trying to get healed.
Of course, you've got too much else.
Yes, I have my children. I want them to be healed completely, but we're all healing together. But one thing I know, being there for someone, it make it easier to bear the pain. Because you can talk to someone, they can set up people they can speak to, counseling, they can have a... Because what they have to understand, the children are there. They are going through pain as much as you, the mother or the father. So the first thing that, for me, that I look after and my community help give to me was my children. To get them to talk, to seek counseling. If they refuse, if they don't want to go to this one, they pick up another one for them. Because they know everybody deal with pain differently. And my children did differently. They deal with the pain differently. Victor will talk. My other son will refuse to talk. So everybody deal with it in different way. So, but just being there, telling them it's okay to cry. Yeah. It's okay to talk. I say some rubbish thing, I tell you. I just, anything that comes out of my head, I just say it, how I feel. It sounds wrong, but I say it. Let us, don't be afraid to say what is in your mind. Don't be afraid to say, I need help. Don't be afraid to be hungry. If this is all what is there, you have to feel all this emotion. But may the Lord help them and keep them. May the Lord just cover them under his wing at this very moment. Because they're going to need God. So they're going to need God so well. They need the strength of the Lord in their life right now. I don't know if they're Christian, but whatever religion they have, they need the protection of the strength of Almighty. Someone that, someone help them. They need the help of him right now. Because a broken heart, this broke your heart. It depends how many he broken it to. It may broke into two, it may broke into pieces. But seek help earlier. We should not leave it late. As early they start taking the help that was given to them, it will be a little bit easier to talk about the pain. If they're not getting help, they will not be able to talk about the pain. So, because it's painful and the heart can be breaking, can be broken to pieces, they need the club. I'm sure I know the club will give them the, because I was given everything they have in their power to give to me. And that's more than I can say thank enough for what they did. So I pray for the club, for all the children, for the Lord to heal their heart, to give them to feel joy and peace again, and to continue to do what they know how to do best. And for the club to seek help for all these children.
Yes.
You know, because they're going to need help.
Yeah.
As well.
And they will. And we know from speaking to people in Cherry Orchard and also in Shelburne that any support that Izzy's family do need, I'm sure will be there for them. Lola, I want to finish with a smile because your smile is amazing, like your son's was. And I think about 6 months ago, I flicked on my TV and I flicked on RT1 and the Late Late Show was on. And a certain Lola Ayatigbo is there, hair done, makeup done, best of clothes on, and you're on with Ryan Tuberty.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. That was an amazing day. An amazing thing that I think this is what Shay way of making fun of me as well, because I never heard about that man before. Never met him. I was just coming, just got my citizenship, and I was going out of the building, and he turned around to me. He was talking to someone and he turned around to me and he said, and he looked at me. I was a bit upset. I was thinking about Shay Davred and I was thinking, because I have my older son, Wally, and I have my youngest one, Victor, there with me, but they were staying outside. So, and I was thinking of Shay, what, God, I wish Shay was there. He will have to, something to say, you know. And I was thinking about it in my mind, but maybe my emotion is showing in my face. I don't know what happened because that man turned to me and he said, it must be really, really emotional day for you. And not knowing who it was. And I said, oh, it really was for me because I lost my son. And I said, it's really because I wish all my children were here. Yeah. And he said, do you mind coming to my show? And I'm looking at him, what show is he talking about? And I have someone at the back because what you say, that's what I'm talking about, my community. When I go for my nationality, citizenship ceremony, here we are. I didn't go alone. I go with...
The whole of Donna Bay were there.
I go with a lot, with a few, one of my... community. I didn't go alone, you know. So, yeah, she was at the back doing like this. So I said, okay, yes. And then said, okay, can you speak to that man? He's going to take your phone number. So I gave him my phone number and my name. And that was it. We went home. The second day, I received a phone call saying, do you want to come over and talk about Shay? And I said, yes. Yes, anything, you know, for me talking about Shay just bring, it make my day. I just want to talk about Shay every day. So I said, yes, but I want them to, for them to see the help that I received in my community, the club, my family and friends that was given to me. I want people to understand that and that without this help, the support that I have, I will not be where I'm sitting here like this today. Yeah. And I thank God for everything He was giving to me. I told them, said, God brought some amazing, amazing women into my life, amazing men as well. But talking about Shay, and I believe Shay just is a showman. He's someone that wants people to just have to notice him. And I think he just wants his name to be said again on TV. That's why he dropped that man to me that day, because I didn't know who he was. But I have amazing day. And if he's listening, I'd like to say Merry Christmas and thank you for having me on that day. Really, really enjoyed it.
Now, Ryan Tuberty, if you're listening or watching, Lola didn't know who you were, but now she does. And she's very happy that you were on The Late Late Show. Lola, I've had the pleasure to know you since the week that Shay died. I didn't know Shay too well. I knew him a little bit and I've really enjoyed getting to know you over the last 2.5 years. I know I'm speaking for everybody listening when we say you're an inspirational lady and we all love you. And thank you so much for chatting to us about Shay, about Izzy. I know you're going to speak to Izzy's family and have a great Christmas. Thank you.
And same to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, some inspirational stuff really from Loya Ayatigbo about her son Shay. And also... her wants to find Izzy Dizou's family to give them some help and support during this very difficult time. And we know Izzy's funeral is going to be on next Saturday, which is December 23rd, the day before Christmas Eve, which is going to be so tough for his family and friends and everybody involved. So if you know the family and you'd like to put them in touch with Lowell, you can contact us, you can email us. Give you my email address, it's jamie.moore@98fm.com. That's jamie.moore, jamie.mwore@98fm.com. You'll get us as well on Facebook and Twitter. Just drop us a DM on 98FM Sport on the torts. Our thoughts and prayers, should I say, of course, with Izzy Dizou, his family and friends, and with Lola and the Iotigbo family as well. And thank you so much for Lola, for Dave Collins from Cherry Orchard, and for Dr. Alan Byrne from the FAI for taking part in our special piece today on the That's What I Call Sport.